If Greece is in deep doo-doos, PNG is in turmoil yet again. Late last year, the bloke known as the Founding Father, Sir Michael Somare, was forced to end his parliamentary career after being disqualified as an MP after 43 years in government. The reason? He'd been absent from 1, 2, 3 consecutive sessions of Parliament, and Peter O'Neill was sworn in as PM in his stead. This week, in a dramatic announcement, the Supreme Court ordered the return of Sir Michael to the Prime Ministership, and the court's rulings came as candidates began campaigning for the June national election. So what's going on in our neighbourhood? To tell us more, I'm joined by two of PNG's new generation of writers and thinkers. One of them, Martin Namurong, has just arrived on our shores to speak about the problems afflicting his country, one of which, he says, is Australia itself. He writes in his controversial blog, "I thought all my life that I was destined to great things. Today, faced with the hardship of living in the city, I'm more concerned with being able to survive each day. I don't dream anymore. I am grounded in the reality. Perhaps there are too many visionaries and no one is there to deal with the reality of life in Papua New Guinea." My other guest, Alex Rennie, began his career as a cadet with the National newspaper in Moresby. He became second secretary at the British Embassy in Moresby and moved to Australia to do his master's just up the road at Sydney Uni. He was a scholarship student under the Australian Leadership Awards. Well, Alex, we got something right. He's now attached to the Melanesia program at the Lowy Institute. Now, the last time we spoke, the Grand Chief, Sir Michael, had been disqualified after 43 years. And this week we hear the PNG court ruling wants him reinstated. Is there a major power struggle betwixt Parliament and the Supreme Court? Is your Supreme Court behaving a bit naughtily, like the US Supreme Court did at a certain time of political crisis?
Well, the judiciary seems to be giving that perception, Philip. And especially when two members of judges of the Supreme Court decided not to actually abstain from actually giving a decision on the constitutionality of the O'Neill government.
Abstained from giving?
They abstained. Justice Salika and Justice Sakora abstained from giving down their ruling when the court handed down the ruling yesterday. So when that happened, it sent out mixed signals to Papua New Guineans.
A very mixed signal, I would have thought. They don't get much more mixed than that. The appointments to the Supreme Court made over the years predominantly by Somare?
No, there is a Judicial Appointments Commission. It's a bipartisan committee that comprises both the Prime Minister, the opposition leader, and notable representatives from both church and civil society. So it's bipartisan. It's supposed to be independent.
Martin, what's your view of the Supreme Court? Do you view it with respect?
Well, the Supreme Court has certainly lost its respect amongst Papua New Guineans, generally because when the transition happened in August, on the 3rd of August last year, the majority of the Papua New Guinea population was behind the change in leadership. And they will not, I think, buy any of the legal arguments, or as some people like to call it, the legal gymnastics that goes on with that. And one would have expected that at this time, that there would be a bit more pragmatism on all parties, and particularly the courts. However, it is understandable that the court cannot contradict its decision from the 12th of May. So, in my opinion, it's hardly surprising. 12th of December last year, so it's kind of not surprising how the decision was handed down.
How has O'Neill reacted? I understand that he's said he'll go along with it, he'll respect the process.
The way Parliament has been recalled and all that stuff is consistently what happened at the 12th of May. So Parliament accepted that the court had handed down a decision making the appointment of O'Neill illegal, and it decided that it would re-elect O'Neill also on the 12th of May. The way I'm seeing what is playing out is that it will probably do the same thing again. Or given the recent movements to oust O'Neill and postpone the elections, we could possibly have another prime minister as well coming up.
So on the one hand, Alex, we've got O'Neill saying he'll respect, he'll go along with the court's decision, but in the same breath he talks about judges smacking of judicial corruption.
Yes, he's had issues with the Chief Justice prior to the December 12, 2011 decision. There were some allegations which his government has brought up against the Chief Justice, and they made several attempts to remove the Chief Justice from office only to be smacked with a restraining order by the Supreme Court itself. So that has been an ongoing tussle.
And Alex, alongside O'Neill and the show of strength, you had the Police Commissioner, the Defence Force Chief, and PNG's top bureaucrat.
That's right. They've all made collective decisions to actually side with the O'Neill government. I'm not really sure as to how what actually influenced them to take in those positions, but I would think that it was because of O'Neill's majority rule on the floor of Parliament.
Martin, you're could be described as crazy brave in your blogging. You're pretty outrageous, but I was fascinated that you experienced corruption firsthand when you had to bribe an official to release your passport to come here.
That's sort of the reality of a lot of things that happened. What happened was not necessarily in relation to coming at this trip here, but when I was trying to go over to Deakin University earlier on, and it was a bit difficult to get my passport on time and too many delays and stuff like that. So we had to, try and jump through the hoops and get it as soon as possible. Unfortunately, that did not eventuate.
It wasn't political in nature, the passport
problem. No, I think a lot of people experience the same. It's just...
Okay, well, you're here to quote, tell Australia the truth. What are your concerns about us?
I suppose my concerns about Australia, something that is not new, but in telling the truth, I also wish to put something out, and that is highlight that PNG is not just the basket case that everyone hears about, because it's only those stories, about the current political crisis and all that come up. But there's a lot of positives that also happen in Papua New Guinea. And my own personal story is an example of that. I have not asked for any foreign help or national help from anybody. I'm quite content selling betel nut on the streets and blogging. And I suppose that's my way of making a statement that, we Papua New Guineans can do stuff for ourselves as well.
You don't want to strengthen paternalism.
Exactly. And I suppose Australians have some sort of superiority complex that in the way they look towards Papua New Guinea. And I also wish to deal with that issue as well. But there are the other issues that everyone's aware of, the difficulties Papua New Guineans have in getting a visa to come to Australia to visit relatives and stuff like that. But also in relation to the way AIDS being delivered to Papua New Guinea.
Well, let's look at that, Alex, because PNG is Australia's largest recipient of foreign aid, yet it's said to have some of the worst health and education outcomes in the Asia-Pacific region. Where's the aid going astray? What's going wrong?
I think the real problem is in the capacity of the PNG government itself and the public service machinery to actually implement and take all those aid intervention programs out to rural Papua New Guinea. Now, a lot of USAID's funding programs are actually tied in with PNG government. But when there is a bottleneck with the PNG government bureaucracy and processes, consequently, Papua New Guineans miss out on those intervention programs. I think that's the reason why USAID has decided to go out in a big way to get into partnerships with other non-state actors such as churches. And churches are actually quite present in very, very remote parts of Papua New Guinea. And I think it was a step in the right direction for USAID to actually partner with churches, because churches are the only presence in most parts of rural Papua New Guinea.
Alex, If Australia is treating PNG like a forgotten neighbour, surely that opens an opportunity for a hypothetical country like China to step in.
Yeah, well, where Australia can provide, China provides. And I mean, over the last couple of years, Australia has actually come down with conditions that are tied to some of the aid intervention programs that are run in PNG, and successive PNG governments have not necessarily liked to meet some of those criteria that are tied to the aid program. So consequently, they've looked outside of traditional bilateral partners such as Australia and New Zealand, and consequently China has sort of filled a vacuum.
This is a little wireless program called LNL on RN and via all sorts of avant-garde technical platforms, and we're discussing the political crisis in PNG with journalist Alex Rennie and PNG writer, blogger, activist Martin Namurong. Martin, are you concerned that China might loom large?
The effects of the, if you like,
China's... We have a slightly better civil rights record than China, I would have thought.
The effect of what we would describe as the Chinese primitive economy and its expansion to acquire resources for its own economy have felt largely in communities like those in Medang province that I have gone and met, particularly those at the refinery site at Basamuk, the Romanico project refinery site at Basamuk. And indeed, even in Medang town, there is effect on local businesses where they have to face competition from the Chinese who are coming in. So there are indeed a lot of adverse effects of that. And I suppose Australia has some sort of responsibility in that. There was a little bit of removing the shoe incident that pushed some PNG leaders to look a lot more to China. And consequently, after that, we've had the Chinese coming and giving us essentially a very raw deal on the Romanico mine.
You wrote a really interesting blog when you arrived yesterday. Let me read it. What happened to the trees, the creeks, the rivers, the animals, the plants? A big city is like a cancer eating up what makes us human. I can now understand what the constitutional fathers might have been referring to when they wrote about the darkness of neon lights. You don't want neon lights darkening PNG.
The darkness of neon lights that is referred to is in the Constitutional Planning Committee report. And this was a discussion on the why the Fifth National Goal and Directive Principle, Papua New Guinean Waste, was important. And what they were referring to were the consequences or the negative and adverse effects of the type of, if you like, Western-style development that was taking place. And they reaffirmed Papua New Guinea's connection to its land and the importance of Papua New Guinea's having got. And that's expressed also in my blog post where I said, you know, it is inevitable in any situation where there is this urban expansion that Papua New Guinean customary land will have to be acquired. And the
So there will be a heavy price to pay for what's known as progress.
Yep. And a lot of communities faced it. And the classic examples, obviously, the Bougainville crisis and how failure to understand land matters in Bougainville led to a civil war that killed over 20,000 people.
You're a small businessman yourself because you sell betel nut in Port Moresby's markets to earn money to support your writing. And as I read out in the beginning, you say you don't dream anymore. I think you dream all the time.
No, I don't. And a lot of things that have happened have been things that, you know, even coming now to Australia on this tour wasn't something I dreamt of. Traveling around the country and meeting people wasn't something, you know, I thought of as a betel nut seller. I mean, I had my dreams at medical school when I was a medical student. I had sort of my future figured out. But everything that has happened after that is beyond my expectations. So I'm like, just savor the moment at the moment. Yeah.
Alex, wandering around the region, so we spent quite a lot of time in East Timor. We spent a week or so doing programs, Solomon Islands. I was Everywhere I go, I see a vast number of young people, particularly young men, completely cut out of anything like an economic system. And you're working on a paper about the youth of PNG, make up 40% of the population, and you say they haven't played a role in nation building, and the government should solve this problem as they are sitting on a time bomb. I've heard the same bomb ticking elsewhere.
Yes, that's very much so, and that will be the focus of the research paper which I'm working on for the Lowy Institute. Basically, the research paper looks at some of the potential consequences of governments not including the voices of young Papua New Guineans in all the decision-making processes of government. And we see the very high unemployment rate in most of Papua New Guinea towns and cities. And that definitely shows that government intervention programs haven't necessarily gone right down to areas where it matters. And young Papua New Guineans consequently been pushed out of a very cruel education system that doesn't have alternatives for them when, you know, after they get out of grade 10 or grade 12.
Now, Martin, let it be said that your talent is recognised. You won PNG's Crocodile Prize, National Literary Award, for the best essay. You are your country's most prolific and internationally quoted blogger. I assume your audience are the young people we're talking about.
Yes. These are young people, particularly in universities and high schools. And a lot of them respond, and a lot of to what I say... And a lot of the stuff I say resonates with them. I know that some students have taken action, basically inspired by what's been written on my blog, particularly what's on the heading of the blog, and it's about the freedom from fear. And we've had...
Freedom from fear.
Yes, yeah. That's Aung San Suu Kyi's quote, yeah, about freedom from fear. For me, the ultimate fear is death, the fear of death, fear of dying. And having gotten over that bit...
You've got over it? I never have.
I've got over the fear of... And to explain it further, you know, what makes a young kid in Port Moresby go and hijack a vehicle knowing that the cops are going to catch them and shoot them? It's freedom from fear and the fear of death. And that's what it... And what I want to do is... translate that into political action, that freedom from fear.
And shouldn't you contemplate seeking political office?
I won't. I don't think about that. And I don't even consider it as an option about it. Because at the moment, I've done a lot more than some of those politicians anyway.
You wouldn't have to give up blogging just because you're a politician. But I would have thought the social networking is not exactly buoyant in PNG. That's why I guess your audience would be at universities.
The numbers of people on social media sites like Twitter and Facebook are small. However, that is to disregard the PNG context, which is we're all connected to our tribe, a whole extended family. So if you get, for instance, about 100,000 people on Facebook, that's a significant population of people, and they have all these connections, and whatever is happening, the conversations that are happening online get to be translated into conversations happening at the betelnut markets as well.
Okay, Alex, tell us about the PNG middle class. I assume one is growing slowly but surely.
Yeah. I'm sure there is a PNG middle class. These are young Papua New Guineans who are working in both government and in business. They are sort of the middle-level management people. They are the ones who are quite active in social media in Papua New Guinea as well. And they are the ones who've come out very vocal over the last 2 years or so, especially in regards to the constitutional crisis that started in December last year. Now, some of the very active and very vocal Facebook users are working class Papua New Guineans, and they are young, and they form the middle class.
Okay, we're talking about the young. Let's now talk about the old. Michael is in his mid-70s, so Michael. We know he's been to Singapore for several heart ops. How crook is he, Alex? Do we know?
Well, it's an open bypass surgery, so that's serious, especially for someone of his age who's getting into 76 years of age.
What's the life expectancy in PNG?
It's around 60s, I think. Yeah, I think it's about 60.
Okay.
Yeah.
Look, gentlemen, thank you very much for that. Alex Reedy, attached to the Lowy Institute, and Martin Namurong is a writer and activist, and we've attached information about his blog, The Namurong Report, on our website at abc.net.au/Radio National, and look in programs for Late Night Live. Don't forget, you can hear over 200 of my programs from the past 20 years on our online retrospective called In Bed with Philip. Think about that. You're only a young bloke, and in 20 years you'll be able to have a retrospective website. Oh, you can follow us on Twitter, Philip Adams ABC. On our next, who's buying all our agricultural land? And the story of Anthony Martin Fernando, Aboriginal activist who protested on the streets of early 20th century Europe and England against the British government and the treatment of Australian Aborigines. That's your lot for now. Stick around on RN, and I'm going to have some betel nut with one of my guests, and we'll see you later.